Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. We have a listener question that we're dealing with today on the podcast. Craig wrote in and asked, how do we retain what we read? He's getting back into reading novels. And so he wants to know, you know, how is it that you kind of hold on to this stuff as you're going? Because it's reading a novel, we like to act like it's not any work at all. But with all of the cares of the world constantly pulling us in so many directions, Craig is a husband and a father. You know, it's a lot to sit down and decide I'm going to read when I could be doing something else. And so I think it's a pretty natural question or it's a pretty natural desire to want to say, like, if I'm going to sit down and commit to reading, I want this to mean something. I want to hold on to it after this experience is over. So I think that's a good thing. So now the poem, right, Steve?
Oh, I was my hopes had gotten up, and sitting here on the back porch, I thought maybe that dog across the way had distracted you, and he forgot his poem.
No. Now I will say that because we're talking retention, it makes perfect sense that I would. Recite a poem that I have internalized, that I've retained.
Yeah, but you're not
going to
do that.
But I'm not going to. No, I'm not going to. Well, the only thing I remember is Frost, and I like this one better anyway for what we're discussing.
So this is someone other than Frost.
Someone before Frost, in fact, yes.
Excellent.
This is William Wordsworth. One of the romantics. I think he was actually one of the lake poets.
Yep.
I can't remember. Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. So he's one of the lake poets, which that's a fun rabbit trail to go down if you want to. Sort of figuring those guys out. But anyway, Wordsworth has, that I know of, three sonnets that are entitled To Sleep, that he's writing to sleep, right?
When you've got a good title, why mess with it?
Just keep going. Yeah, exactly. He's got more to say. So as far as I know, Wordsworth had insomnia. He had difficulty sleeping. And so these sonnets are pretty neat in terms of seeing a perspective of sleep that's a little different than maybe most of us sort of view sleep in. In any event, I'd like to read this one because I think it has some, well, I don't want to justify it. I just like it. Okay. And I want to read it. Here we go. So this is To Sleep. A flock of sheep that leisurely pass by, one after one, the sound of rain and bees murmuring, the fall of rivers, winds, and seas, smooth fields, white sheets of water, and pure sky. I have thought of all by turns, and yet do lie sleepless. And soon the small birds' melodies must hear, first uttered from my orchard trees, and the first cuckoo's melancholy cry. Even thus last night and two nights more I lay and could not win thee sleep by any stealth. So do not let me wear tonight away. Without thee, what is all the morning's wealth? Come, blessed barrier between day and day, dear mother of fresh thoughts and joyous health. So why this in reading retention?
One of the things that is probably obvious is that if you go to sleep while reading, you won't remember what you've read.
Okay, good. Yes.
Sorry. But
that was totally the case. Yeah. good point. I think another reason is this sort of characteristic list at the beginning, right? Our poet, in trying to get to something, he's unable to do it. So his first, what do you call it? Like his first appeal or his first attempt is to go through the stereotypical things that he knows, right?
Counting sheep.
Counting sheep, thinking of rain falling on the roof, you know, like these characteristic things. Yeah, maybe I don't want to push it too far, but I like the poem for its what do you want to say? It's movement toward the canon. It's movement toward the what I really want to say is topoi, right?
Right.
The sort of
it's
commonplaces.
What memory tells us will help us. Right. That if I've had difficulty sleeping in the past, thinking of some of these things has helped. I remember that. Therefore, I do that. I don't know. Memory is this weird thing. Right. I have arguments with people. It is closely identified with attention. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. You know me. I got a whole book, literally, about human attention. But the mind's ability to focus on something and thereby keep it is something we've been arguing about in Western literature for a really long time. And I think it's important, right? That your friend does not want to read and then forget. It seems like wasted time.
Yeah.
And in a busy life, you don't want to waste time. And yet most of us have had that terrible experience of picking something up that we know we read and being able to remember very little of it. You know, I've had that experience with movies, right? Where I've seen a movie. I know I've seen this movie, but I'm going to watch it again because I can't remember what happened.
Right.
and so part of the argument is, are there just some people gifted with the ability to retain, you know, the quote unquote photographic memory, and others are just terrible at it, and that's the way it is? Or is it a acquired and nourished, nurtured ability that there's real and I don't want to use the word logical, but that's all that's coming to mind at the moment. You know, real steps towards making better. Is there a list of things I could do to make myself retain things better? Or you know, this is the argument, right? The tug of war. I think they're both true.
Yeah. Yes. And absolutely. It definitely. I would say that, you know, of course, there are people who, for one reason or another, just seem to be able to remember what they read or what they see or what they come across. And there are others of us who it's more work, you know, you've got to put in the work, but I don't think that the work is fruitless. There is definitely an improvement that comes with practicing the memory, right?
Yeah. Well, right. So we've made the distinction between a science and an art many times before, but reading, and then as a part of that, retaining what I've read is an art, right? It is something I do. And all arts are A, made better with practice, right? Your old wrestling coach or violin teacher reminded you that of 100 times, right? Practice makes perfect.
That's right.
So it is something that by use becomes better. And I would put the caveat in, by proper use or by being used well,
there you go.
It becomes better, stronger, more redoubtable. But then secondly, it implies that there is knowledge leading to the proper doing, right? If previous episode we talked about cooking. If I'm going to cook well, there are certain things I need to know, ostensibly even before approaching mm-hmm. the kitchen or trying to mix. You know, I need to know what a cup is as far as mm-hmm. measurement goes, and the difference between a cup and a tablespoon. It makes that knowledge makes quite a bit of difference. And I can go in the kitchen and do all sorts of things, but if the knowledge isn't there, so with reading and retention, I find often that many people just poorly define reading, first of all, as decoding, right? Nice. If you put a series of words in front of me, I can tell you what those words are. And that is reading at a very basic level. I'm pulling off of Mortimer Adler's notion that there are four levels to reading. I love the fact that he wrote a 440-page book on how to read a book. Yes, have you read it and taught it? I still teach it. It is a fantastic thing.
I saw it and I tried to read it. I was just like, man, this is a lot.
So I don't. The term textbook applies to that book perhaps more specifically than most textbooks. I believe it is a resource.
Yeah.
It is a text from which one teaches, not sort of autodidactic experience.
You don't plow through.
I would be very hesitant to suggest, especially to a young person, that here's a book on how to read a book, go read it and you'll be a better reader. That's not true.
That's precisely how it was introduced to me when I was about 19. No.
Bad.
And it was too much. I wanted to. I tried to. I picked a few things up. No doubt there were helpful tips. Well, but I read it, you know, and I just got into it and I thought, man, I still got 370 pages of this stuff.
Well,
I'm out.
So his point is an excellent distinction between arts and sciences. The first third of the book is almost entirely focused on reading as an art and stating that it's done at four levels. Okay, the most basic decoding, I can read, I learned how to do it in first grade kind of thing. I know what the words are. Is the most basic form of reading. And for many of my students, they think that when I tell them to read this book, they think that's all I mean. I started page one and finished page 85 and I read the book.
Whatever.
But he goes and actually blows most people's minds by saying that the next level up, more intense and more useful, and to the question that we're answering, more capable of retention, the second level is inspectional reading or skimming, which I argued for when I was in middle school. I tried to convince my teachers that I'd read the book. I had thumbed through the pages. Yeah. Now, Adler teaches that the art of skimming,
how to skim,
involves, you know, for the authors that have been nice enough to provide us with a robust table of contents that actually tells us what's in the contents.
Yeah.
And you see this in older works.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
But some of the newer ones, it just says chapter one, chapter two. It's just designed to help you get to the right page number in the book. Mm-hmm. But he says the table of contents, the blurb on the back, the title, first and last paragraph of each chapter, et cetera. He teaches you ways to inspect a work and get the bird's eye view mm-hmm. of the book, mm-hmm. which if you have that, right, many people have taught me that that central to the art of retaining what I read is knowing what the question is and some sense of how the author is answering it, right?
Yeah.
That if you just jump in and get lost in the trees, you'll totally forget that you're in a forest. And so this is Adler's suggestion, is that some books are only worth a skim. And when you've skimmed it, you go, this book is not of any use to me.
Sure.
And there you've saved yourself a considerable amount of time.
Good.
Right.
Good. Yeah.
Or you've maybe discovered that given what the book is about, I only want to read a part of it, mm-hmm. or given yourself hope. If I can get through the first few chapters where he's setting up the situation, what I really want to know is towards the end, but I got to read myself
right,
there.
Right, right.
Take hope, dear heart. Mm-hmm. You know,
slog through. You'll make it.
The goods are there. Yeah. You know? And that leads then to the third level of reading, which is what you and I mean when we assign reading to students typically. This is that deep reading, mm-hmm. that analytical reading, mm-hmm. that reading and rereading until I understand it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of the problem. And he makes a distinction. And so we need to make a distinction between what I'll call analogical reading and prosaic reading or linear reading, right? Some mostly nonfiction books are designed to take you from this point of knowing very little about the subject of the book to the end where you know a lot more about it, and they do this in a very linear point by point.
One plus one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Whereas analogical or narrative stories is trying to get you to picture truth, right?
Cool.
And it has to be approached a little bit different. I don't know how I would actually argue against much inspectional reading for narrative, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the fun is not knowing what's going to come at the end.
Right. Yeah. Well, and this is part of his thing. Like when you practice each, he's not saying go read the last page of the novel and see if you want to read it.
Right. No,
you've got to know when to practice. So it's right. I agree. I think I remember the fourth level of reading. This is when Adler.
What's the most exciting?
Yeah, he says that's when you're sort of like merging books about the same topic together. You're like pushing them in conversation with one another.
Yep, syntopical reading, which is when you're entering the canon.
Yeah.
Okay, and he pushes this notion. There are certain great ideas. He lists 102 of them that are commonplace to all sincere literary discussion, love, freedom, evil, mm-hmm. democracy, a lot of relationships.
Sure. Faith, hope, that he love. Has. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So his point is that as I start reading what is now for me book E, and the author of A and C disagreed with E, mm-hmm. if I remember what A and C said and see the way in which B agrees with E, and so this conversation starts happening where the other authors that I remember reading, mm-hmm. right, here's the heart of our question, if I've retained it, if I remember their points about, let's just say, freedom.
Yeah.
And some are arguing freedom is a completely external thing determined by government and determined. And others are arguing it's a complete internal thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Milton's words of Satan, that the mind is a place of itself.
Right.
It can make a heaven of hell and a hell of heaven.
Right.
You know, that as these voices all start arguing within me, I start forming now my own view, as opposed to just seeing the view of a given author in my analytical reading. That's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to re-enter into this text so fully that I understand what the author thinks about whatever the subject is.
Right.
Syntopical is when I've read enough about the topic that I start to see various opinions and form my own well-formed opinion from the various voices that have helped teach me.
Right.
And I feel like I mean, that's a whole wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that Adler has his finger on that. If you read well, you will retain more. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
But it's skirting the issue a little bit, because what the listener is asking is, what are those things that I should do to retain? Well, I think that if you inspect what you're reading before you read it, and in nonfiction, it will help a great deal.
Yeah.
But in fiction, even there, I think it's legitimate. The inspectional reading I invite my students to is not what's going to happen at the end of the story, but why was the story written? who wrote it? Mm-hmm. What's the historical context in which it was written?
Yeah.
And I find, like, for instance, I've just finished teaching some sophomores about Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels.
Okay.
Very few of them knew anything about it. Most of them knew about it through some cartoon or TV show or movie that they had seen. They hadn't read the book.
Right.
A couple of them said that, you know, they just viewed it as a children's story. You know, yeah. Fantasy.
Right.
And yeah. If you just opened up the book and started reading it, I get that.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
These little tiny people sure. And these great huge giants and a land floating in the air and so on and so forth. And people doing all kinds of weird and silly things. It just sounds it is similar.
It's fantastic.
Right, to Alice.
Yeah.
Right. It's Alice going down the rabbit hole
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And can be read at the level of entertainment. You know, the Queen of Hearts is funny.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Or the argument about how to crack an egg in Gulliver's Travels is by itself entertaining. But when they understand that back behind that is a whole political agenda
yeah.
that Swift had
right.
and that he's writing satire and that he is an Irishman closely linked in his own personal life to British rule and nonetheless concerned that that the way the Brits are ruling Ireland is killing off Irishmen.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it takes it's on more a new tone. Yeah,
right. Suddenly, I'm not just saying, well, what a silly thing to say. What response is he trying to elicit from his readers? Which, of course, again, that's the problem with agenda-driven stories. I think it's a great story on its own, and there's many universal truths that it's pulling out, but the specifics to England and Ireland maybe are lost on this. They don't care.
Right.
but again, so then that's the question to retain it. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to retain the specifics to that, but the principles or the universal truths that come out of that discussion.
Right. Well, what it has in common, or not necessarily in common, but what, let's take Adler's ideas, right? Which of Adler's ideas is it speaking to? Because then all of a yep. sudden, when you have inspected that and you get a little context, you get a little understanding about sort of what motivated Swift to write it and what Swift actually wrote. I mean, generically, the genre that it's a part of, not the words on the page, but what he saw those words doing, then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, this book isn't in conversation with Shel Silverstein. This book is really more in conversation with George Orwell than I thought, right?
Right.
I'm not
right.
saying it's the same genre. I'm just saying there are some interesting conversations that could happen between those two authors if you are well, if you just know that of certain things about each of them.
Right. Well, and if you're willing to read broadly.
Right.
Right. Here's where I get myself in trouble with people. I get asked all the time, because I designed it, why our high school still demands the hard work of the Odyssey,
mm-hmm.
Virgil.
Right.
Beowulf. Beowulf they kind of get because it's a cool movie. Sir Gawain, you know, pretty much everything prior to Fitzgerald, they want to know why we even have kids read that. Mm. And of course, I often answer with Chesterton's notion of chronological snobbery is at play here. Just because it's old doesn't make it bad.
Mm-hmm.
If it's universal, it's universal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Odysseus is still a man,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot about him that we can learn from, even several thousand years later. But what they often ask is, when are we going to read relevant, something that the kids can relate to?
Yeah.
And so I had this ask of me by I was substituting for another English teacher, so it was at the religious school I teach at, the Catholic high school I teach at, several years ago now, many years ago. And they were just starting what I thought was a great modern novel, Golding's Lord of the Flies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was excited to get them started on it. I was sad that I was going to have to, you know, give it back to the normal teacher.
Yeah, sure, of course. That's a fun one.
But the one little girl, and this was several years ago, so you get, if you're familiar with modern literature, this will all fit for you. She said, when are we ever going to read something relevant and appropriate? She used the word appropriate at this school.
Okay.
And I said, what?
Exactly. Tell me what's appropriate. Yeah, that's a perfect setup. Yeah, like,
what do you have in your mind? And she said, something like 50 Shades of Grey or something.
Buddy.
Let's talk about the word appropriate for a moment. Because I don't think pornography is appropriate. Right. Well, it's not pornography. But she was highlighting the fact that if it isn't just recently written, it doesn't have anything to say to me. And I believe the opposite. Mm. I do not demote or denigrate the reading of current contemporary literature. You just have to understand that in our question of retention, my belief is it's going to be much harder to retain something so much like my own life that it hardly moves me than something so different from my own life. Right? When you enter the world of Odysseus,
right,
you're on a different planet.
Yeah, it's so unlike our own experience that it's hard to forget what's going on.
Right. So the act of retention is in part based in intent.
Okay.
With a fictional piece.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I entering this fictional piece to be entertained, to basically be able to turn my mind off for a little while and just, brain candy?
Yeah.
Or am I trying in reading quote unquote good literature that the motive seems to be a better person.
Okay.
To better understand life, to be improved by reading this.
Right.
Right.
Which is a very noble notion, I think, that we want to certainly commend, right?
Well, exactly. So if your motive is entertainment, who cares if you remember it or
right.
not?
Yeah.
It's the moment, right? It's that act itself, and at the end of it, the job is completed. I either did or did not get carried away to some other place and forget about life's troubles for a while and just enter into some of that. And that's perfectly legitimate, by the way.
Totally.
I am not suggesting that that's a bad motive.
Good.
I'm just saying that when you talk about retention, let's talk about why you want to retain. And, to pick up a certain kind of novel and just read it for relaxation, if it relaxes me, the mission is accomplished, right?
Boom. Yeah, done.
To pick up Mogams of Human Bondage and work through that thick tome, very complicated plot outside my own time, I need more motive than entertainment.
Yeah, that's right.
I face that all the time. But my favorite storyteller is Charles Dickens. And students often hear that. And they, first of all, if I hand them a volume, they go, whoa, that's really big.
Yeah.
Yes. He was long-winded.
Yes, he was.
what is my mission here? If my mission is to be just simply be allowed to turn my mind off, Dickens is the wrong guy to ask for that. Mm-hmm. My neighbor Nicholas Sparks might be better. So now I'm going to get myself in trouble.
Yeah,
for that.
Easy.
Edit button. Yeah. But I don't even say that because of content. I say that because of contemporarity, right? That somebody writing about my own time and place, I do use Nicholas Sparks in this regard. He's writing about Eastern North Carolina where I live. I know many of the places that he uses in his works. And I know this because I've read his works, by the way. I'm not picking on somebody I haven't read.
There you go.
But I don't care to retain. Is so much of what he's writing about is already familiar to me. It's the life I already live within, or I know people like it, so to speak, that I don't feel like I have to remember it because I'm there.
Yeah.
So it's
a confirmation of your experience more than it is a
movement.
Movement,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, good. So what sort of things do we want to retain? Perhaps it's good enough to say, I don't know if you're wanting to dive into that question or if it's enough to say, we want to retain the stuff that makes us better people broadly, right? Because if I think if we open the can of worms on, well, what sort of stuff is that? That's like a whole nother episode, season of episodes almost, right?
Right. It's almost like a problem Cicero discusses with friendship.
Okay.
Aristotle has this on his discussion of friendship as well. We have friends. We know people for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And a story is basically developing a relationship with a fictional character or characters.
Yeah.
So I have those friends that the guy that makes my sub sandwich at Subway is my friend only in that he's there to make me a sandwich.
Yeah.
We don't interact for any other reason, right? He's very utilitarian when it comes to a relationship with me. Mm-hmm. I got the $5 and you got the sandwich. Let's make a deal.
Yeah.
Whereas other folks, the relationship I had with them were much more complex, and I would never boil it down to what they do for me. Mm-hmm. Right, we're related at a much deeper level than just what you've done for me lately.
Right,
type of, not to quote Janet Jackson too often on the episodes, but so why do you want this relationship? When you say I want to retain what I read, and I ask the question why. Mm-hmm. It's trying to get at, like you said, to be a better person. Well, in what way? Mm-hmm. If I'm reading this story, okay. What's his name? Well, the author doesn't matter near as much as the work that he wrote.
wow.
That's a whole other episode.
Theoretical
there.
Claim alert. Highly theoretical.
A river runs.
Yeah. Yeah.
A river runs through it. Mm-hmm. Right. If you read A River Runs Through It because you're fascinated by fishing and you think in there may be some tips to help you better fly fish.
Yeah.
Okay. Legitimate. Right.
Totally.
You got a motive and you heard that that's a great book about fly fishing, which it is.
Yeah.
But I would argue that you're missing the main point.
Okay.
The main point is the two brothers and the dad and their relationship and the kinds of people they are. And how the two brothers are really envious of each other's life, even though each is living the life they want to live, they wish they could live the other brother's life. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. The guy that's footloose and fancy free in the movie, the Brad Pitt character, envies his more straight-laced brother who at least, you know, has a paycheck coming in and has a wife and has kind of the life.
Yeah.
Which he forgoes with his footloose, fancy-free life. So, and the way they relate, most notably, is through fishing. So, you're spot on. If you read the novel because it's about fly fishing and you want to know more about fly fishing or you like fly fishing, I think it's going to be a thumbs up for you, and you'll probably retain the things it says about fly fishing.
Yeah.
But you could also pick up the book knowing nothing about fly fishing and, frankly, sort of like me, just not into fishing.
Yeah.
And still find it a fascinating novel, as I found it, because of the relationships. Again, it's back to the cause, back to the why am I reading this, and thus what do I want to get out of it, and then how would I retain that? And I honestly think some of retention is just – entering, knowing what you want to get out of it.
Mm. Okay.
Too many people enter a book either because they just, it's there, it looked interesting. I don't even know why it looked interesting. I'm just going to read this and see what happens.
Good.
And not much does happen when you enter aimlessly. I mean, it can, but it often is harder.
Yeah.
Or, you know, frankly, many people's only experience with books is assignments.
True.
And I have discussed, and I would love to discuss with you on the podcast sometime, is the English class killing lovers of literature, right? By making kids read stuff, are we actually making them hate reading stuff.
Yeah. Or are we actually distorting the definition of read to go back to
right.
old Adler's? Court. Yes, that's good. Okay, so let's I just want to sort of put a lid on that question by saying one more thing about it before we move, because we really ought to get into answering Craig's question directly, right? I think what we've done is discuss a lot of the underpinnings that need to be, I think these are the more important questions that arise first, prior to the actual retention.
But the premises.
Yes, exactly. Premises. I want to say this about it before we move to the list. Here would be my plug for communities of readers, right? You asked the question, what am I hoping to get out of this book? One really fantastic way to vet materials, to organize them and categorize them and sort of be able to work through them more quickly, more easily, more readily, is to have a group of people that are readers, right? Because if you're reading, you can only do so much. But if you have 9 other readers who are also reading and you're passing information back and forth, hey, read The River Runs Through It because of this. This is a book about whatever. Then you are tipped off and you are constantly tipping off your fellow readers as you are working through books together, right? I don't think that can be overstated. I think that having a group would be enormously beneficial to
yeah. I would even ramp one step down from that and say, talking about it is better than not. If you find it difficult to form or keep going a group. Mm-hmm. Even discussing it with one other person,
yeah,
right, is way better at getting the retention going,
yeah,
than you just reading it, closing the book, putting it on the shelf, and going on.
Okay, boom. So now we're into our sort of more practical, although we shy away from that word. We're to our bullet points here. One of the things you can do to help you retain a book. Or a set of information or a story or whatever is talk about it. That is one enormously helpful retention, we'll call it, device.
Right. The second is like it.
Okay.
Some would say it's the same one, only in a different mode. But I warn you, most people jerk the knee mm-hmm. when they hear me say it. So let me say it and then put all my caveats around it.
Okay.
Because I don't mean it as seriously as it's going to sound. Uh-huh. Talking about it's incredibly powerful. Writing about it is very useful.
Yes. Now, good.
I don't mean the quote unquote book report. That's probably a great way to kill it for you. Yeah. And I don't mean some big thing. I have found maybe this is a sub step or sub box in our checklist. Mm-hmm. I have found this great online useful tool to me.
Okay.
It's basically a Facebook for readers, right? Called Goodreads.
Nice.
It's free. You can gather reading friends. It promotes the writing of short reviews so that if I'm about to read a book and I put it into Goodreads, I can see what other people have said. I often don't poison the well.
Yeah, sure.
But it's always, in particular, it's why my want to read list grows so quickly is I have, I don't know, 20 or 30 friends on Goodreads. And when I see one of them, you know, wax poetic or at least give a 5-star rating to a book, it often goes on my want to read because I know this person and I know the kind of reader they are and they like the book. I might like it.
Great.
But the act of feeling like when I finish the book, so of course there's the delight in saying I finished the book and it has a whole stats section we can keep track of how much you've read this year and feel real guilty about that, Mark.
Yeah, sure.
But as you're completing, it gives you a field to write a little bit about what you thought. Mm-hmm. And I often will. I don't always. Sometimes it isn't worth it.
Yeah.
But if it was a book that affected me, I feel like because I got friends, I give them just a – I don't spoil it.
Yeah.
I just liked it for these reasons. Da, 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 da. And it's amazing how that pause before the book goes up on the shelf results – in a much better retention than if I would have just, you know, snapped it shut, thrown it on the shelf and gone away.
Well, it's
15 years from now, coming back and not even remembering that I read it.
Right. And it's just that however brief and however tentative, that moment of assessment, right, where you are assessing the book and you're saying it forces you when – it's like when you're speaking a foreign language, right? When you can hear somebody speaking a foreign language and not understand it, or you can understand it like, yeah, I've got the sense. Okay, well, then say what they said.
Right.
And then it's like that. Like it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But when you can, I mean, I did this all the time when I was teaching Latin. I would talk and talk and talk. But when one of my students could, it's not regurgitation. When someone could answer a question or when someone could summarize what I said, that is a different level of being able to understand, right? That's a new level of understanding. And so when you require that of yourself, it is a very, it may seem, I don't know how it may seem, but what I'm saying is it's an important way to actually produce something. And that is very lasting in the memory when you had to do it, right?
Well, and it provides an artifact.
Important.
If it's written.
That's right.
Right. If it's written, it provides you with something to go back to when your memory mm-hmm. invariably does fail you.
Right.
And you can't remember as much as you wanted. I know I like that book, but I don't remember why.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
So what about
I think that right along with that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say, so writing in the book is where that leads me.
Well, that's – so great minds, right?
Yeah.
Funny anecdote.
Okay.
I read Adler's How to Read a Book between high school and college.
Yeah.
And I had a good experience because I was not just handed it by a fellow, a former teacher of mine in high school, but he followed up and we had, you know, met at a McDonald's and talked about it.
Nice.
And that made all the difference in the experience for me. Mm-hmm. But in that book, he mentions and goes into, I think there's a whole chapter on how to mark a book. And he actually wrote a book entitled How to Mark a Book.
Wow.
And I said, well, that would be good. And so I get off to college, you know, college library. It's this deep and engaging place, at least they used to be.
Yeah,
sure. And so I'm wandering around and I get in my head, I'm going to look up that book. And I found it. Now, I think Adler wrote that in the 50s.
Yeah, How to Read a Book 19... was written in 1940.
And I want to say early 50s was How to Mark a Book.
Okay.
And it's much, much – you talked about 440 pages of How to Read a Book. How to Mark a Book is, I want to say, under 100 pages. Oh. It's not a lengthy book at all. Mm-hmm. And I found it, a nice little hardback copy. You know, libraries are great at buying the most expensive version.
Yeah, sure.
I looked at it. It looked like it had been bought when it came out. Mm-hmm. It had last. Okay. And I didn't go to college in the 60s. Okay. I know right. There's the wiseacres out there. That,
I was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the mid 80s, when I'm in college,
right.
It hadn't been checked out since 1967.
Nice.
Now that doesn't mean people hadn't picked it up and in perhaps even just standing there thumbed through it, got its ideas, and, you know, it is short enough that it could have been read at it. It very well might have been read without needing to be checked out. Mm-hmm. I'll put that in there. But the thing that cracked me up,
okay,
and I went to a very strict religious college where rules were a big deal, but and that might explain this, but there wasn't a single mark in the book entitled "How to Mark a Book,"
right.
Which I thought was kind of, hey, start using this
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
But that it of all the notions of retention, so I follow Adler fairly religiously, mm-hmm. right? I skim a book if I have a book, especially nonfiction, but even fiction, if I have a book that seems important, I give it a good look over in advance of just starting it on page one.
Yeah.
And then as I read it, I got to have a pen or a pencil near me. I have formed my own set of critical marks. Mm-hmm. I actually don't even teach those to my students. I teach them highlighting and give them a different color for different things. Mm-hmm. But I do mark for various reasons, passages in both fiction and nonfiction.
Right.
And it is amazing how the act of stopping, figuring out how much of what was just said I want to mark and in what way it ought to be marked, heightens the retention of that said passage, as opposed to just reading it, that was good, and keep on going. Mm-hmm. The pause places it more cleanly in the mind, in my opinion.
Okay, good. So let me talk for a minute about how my sort of marking books has developed, because the person who got me marking books is none other than our good pal Buck Holler.
Yes.
And so, but when I started,
he's really good at it, by the way.
He is. When I started teaching with Buck and we were working together. I was young, 24, maybe 25. I didn't mark books at all. I was fresh out of college, pretty well fresh out of college, and I hadn't read that much. So basically, I could remember everything I read, right? Because there wasn't that much that I'd read. And I had tried marking in books a little bit, but it infuriated me to come back to a book and see markings in it, because I felt like I just wanted to have a conversation with the author. And when somebody else with their pen or pencil, including a previous version of myself, had interrupted that conversation, it ticked me off. I really didn't like it at all. And so, you know, Buck would say, "Oh man, this is an amazing book, dude. You got to read this." And he would loan me his copy and I'd just hand it back to him. You know, like, I'm not reading this. I can't make it through because I've got too many people talking to me at the same time. I've got all these marginal notes, which now I make extensive use of, and I think are really a wonderful thing. Getting at that sort of syntopical reading, right, where I'm starting to add references of my own. But, you know, yeah, it annoyed me. But the change came when I started viewing reading differently. And it's not, it didn't happen all at once, but I can talk about it now like it did. Over a span of time, I came to view reading. See, formerly what I thought reading was open a book, read it, get everything you can out of it, and then don't come back to it. Right? Rereading was not something that I planned on doing. And referencing also was not really something that I planned on doing. But when I began to view reading as a sort of coming to a source for something, being affected by it, but then returning to that source over and over again, all of a sudden, marking a book became a tremendous help to me, right? Because as I was, marking became my way of communicating to my future self, hey, dude, pay attention to this part. This is good, right? This has something in common with this other thing that you're reading right now, or what have you. And so marking has, for me, probably become the thing that helps me retain the most, whereas it used to not have any room in my book at all.
Right. So, yes, this is sort of back to my discussion of Cicero, right? That mm-hmm. the guy at Subway is just giving me a sandwich, and once I've got the sandwich, that's the end of the relationship. Yeah. Whereas, you know, maybe a chef, let's call him Chef Susan, I get a meal from her and am impressed with her ability so much so that I want to come back time after time to be fed, not to get a good steak, but to get Chef Susan's steak.
Exactly.
Right. And so I think even a step up from that is an old practice that in particular for fiction, right? Okay. I'll read a whole, 400-page novel, mm-hmm. and there's those 4, 5, 6 moments of metaphysical interaction. When the author has written something that's lifted me up, that has yeah. made me go, wow, that was great. Mm-hmm. The old habit of a commonplace book, right? Which is
good,
a lot of work in some people's minds. But if wanting to retain is so that I don't waste my time reading a book, then one of the ways you can kind of get past having to come back and reread regularly, which is not there are just books that I do that with, right?
Yeah, the brothers.
But if I want to keep as close to possible as your desire initially to read and be done with, then mm-hmm. I need to pick the fruit as I walk through the orchard, right?
Yeah,
and take it with me. And the commonplace book, just yeah. a quick, I'll put in the resources section of the webpage for this episode a more detailed discussion of commonplace. But it's basically a reading journal. Right. It's a blank book. And when I read something I really like, I go through the act of copying it down into my commonplace book. And mm-hmm. that by its own act.
Yep.
Puts it more into my mind. It's amazing how I can remember that quote so much more clearly and so much more verbatim, having gone through mm-hmm. the act of copying it and by hand into a commonplace book. As opposed to a lot of people read online these days and want to copy and paste, that's not sending your brain through the act of restating it again in your mind. It's just an electronic act. Maybe if you sure. tag it and reference it correctly, it's a quick way to find the quote again. But
right. Well, but I mean, if you want to talk retention, boom. You retained it. Like you have taken it and put it in a place where it's a commonplace book. Like if you ever are going, oh yeah, what was Walker Percy saying? Well, boom, open it up. Okay, here it is. Hey, sweet. This is the quote, right? And you have it. Like, so by definition, you may not have retained it sort of in your mind, the precise quote, but you've captured it enough that you
you don't have to look through
an effect, right?
You don't have to go back through the whole book trying to where was that place, where was that place? And even with the marking,
right?
Sometimes that can mm-hmm. be frustrating, you know, several hundred page
yeah,
book,
yeah, yeah.
And I can't right. remember. So and just helpful hints with the commonplace because I've taught it to students over the years. Mm-hmm. I think depending on your reading, you should keep them chronologically, and I often suggest to students that they pair it up with the use of something like Goodreads. One of my friends just keeps an Excel file in which he lists what was read, the author. I think he likes to keep track of how many pages. And then in particular, I read it from this date to this date. Gotcha. Because if I'm trying to remember what Walker Percy said, and I read that several years ago, I'm much more likely to remember roughly when I read it. So if my commonplace mm-hmm. books are aligned chronologically, And also I read that in 2016. Okay, so now I've narrowed down. I'm not saying I have 100 commonplace books, but if I have multiple commonplace books, I know roughly which volume to go into. And then it's a matter of flipping a few pages until, oh, there's Walker Percy. Oh, and there's that quote.
Boom.
Yeah. I mean, I
that's good.
Feel like readers like you and I could bury in practical suggestions. I think the key is what.
That's a good start. Yeah,
the key, I think, is up front having the mission figured out. Why am I reading this? It does a lot for you. But then there are there is an art, right? And I'm constantly, just like you and Buck, I'm constantly sort of looking over the shoulder of good readers, trying to figure out how they do what they do, so that I can do it better. It's an apprenticeship,
Good.
It's an apprenticeship. I think that's the point you're making with the reading group, is that you learn a lot more about reading by reading with others, than you would on your own.
That's right. That's right. So, okay. Well, if you've made it this far, then, you really ought to, read, Love in the Ruins, with us. It is a book by Walker Percy, and we're going to be discussing that text at a future date. It's a novel, and it has those metaphysical moments that you talked about, Steve. And so we invite our listeners to read along with us and enjoy that discussion as it comes along. Additionally, thank you, Craig, for sending in your question. It was fun for us to kick around. I hope you got what you were looking for. And I don't know. Steve, closing thoughts?
An hour in, I really don't have any more.
Okay.